Looking at our world from a theological perspective. This is the Theology Central Podcast, making theology central.
Good evening, everyone. It is Monday, March the 18th, 2024. It is currently 10:11 p.m. Central Time, and I am coming to you live from the Theology Central studio, located right here in Abilene, Texas. Now, it's usually, I think it's fair to say it's very rare. It's usually very rare for someone who's broadcasting and covering things happening in the world, maybe, you know, doing news commentary, or as we have a series called Eye on Christianity, where I talk about what's going on in the Christian world. I think it's somewhat unique, somewhat rare, that when you talk about different news stories or you're reporting on different things happening, that you stumble upon a story that you are kind of intimately connected with, at least in part. You have some connection to it that makes it very personal to you, that you can relate to it, that you can express it maybe in a way that's not so academic or just like, here's this story about this thing happening to all of these churches, and this is negative and this is bad, but you don't have any real connection to it. It's different when you look at the story and go, wow, that's happening to all of those churches, and I'm going through the exact same thing right now. That makes it more personal. And tonight, this broadcast, I'm going to be talking about a news story that's talking about something happening to churches. But guess what? This is one of those unique situations where I can very much relate to it, because I'm, in a sense, right in the midst of it. And so I felt like, you know what? I could turn on the microphone. I could have done a devotional message. We could have done something on different things that we've been talking about. But I saw this story. I'm like, I don't know if there's anyone better to turn on the microphone and talk about it than someone who's actually going through it in real time. This may provide a perspective to the listener that they may not get somewhere else. Other podcasters may talk about it and like, wow, that's really messed up. And did you hear this? But they're looking at it from just a very like, here are the facts. Here's what I think about the facts. For me, I can say, here are the facts, and here is what I'm going through, because I'm one of those statistics. I'm one of those statistics, and you don't want to be a statistic, right? Unless it's a positive one, right? I want to be the statistic of the person. What's the current lottery going for? Whatever it's called, mega millions lottery, whatever. It's like nine. I don't even know what it is. It's some crazy number. I saw the news article about it. I want to be that statistic. So, I mean, have to play it to win it, but you get the idea. I would want to be a statistic that's positive, but I'm in a negative statistic. And well, I'm going to set this up. I'm going to tell you a story, but I'm going to tell you a story in a way that you're not supposed to do so as a podcaster, right? Maybe you should do it as a podcaster, but especially as a quote unquote theological podcaster, a religious podcaster, pastor, anything along, Bible teacher, anything along those lines, you usually preach and teach from the perspective, not that you share your failure and your weakness. You typically share, hey, I'm the example of godliness, and you should be. Now, even though you don't say these words, you'll be like, I do this and I do this, and I study and I pray, and I did this and I did this, and I was here and I was doing this, and I was, and all of the stories seem to show that you're, you know, living out the Christian life in a powerful way. Most of the time, you don't like to turn on the microphone to talk about your own failures, your own mess ups. You just, maybe you should, but you don't tend to do that. One, because you'll have people who will start judging you harshly. But second, I think just I can't speak for women, your male ego gets involved. As a male, I want to be considered the smartest. I want to be the strongest. I want to be the best. I don't want to be seen as weak or a failure. But this is a story, before we get to the news story, and there's no other way to put it, it's my failure. Right? It all started 23 years ago. 23 years ago. When I received a phone call and got the opportunity to go out to a broken down building. And when I say broken down, you have no idea. I had no idea what I was getting ready to walk into, but I was invited to come to a building in the middle of nowhere, West Texas, to preach. And I walked in to this building. It was like dirty concrete floors. There were wires hanging from the ceiling. There was just like a couple of metal chairs because people had been meeting in this broken down, abandoned building, sitting in little metal chairs, listening to sermons on cassette, for crying out loud. And I was asked to come preach. So I preached and they were like, oh yeah, okay, that's pretty good. We like that. And I think I preached a second time. And next thing you know, I was asked to become the pastor to this small group of people in this broken down building. And I never dreamed that that's like where my ministry was going to start, but that's where it started. And from the night that, or the day that I became the official pastor, that night, I think it was my first Sunday evening service as a pastor, I told all of those people, because they didn't really ask me a lot of good questions, probably to bring me on as a pastor. They were just desperate, right? They were desperate. They had gone through some really messed up situations and some churches where the church brought in like armed guards to keep people out. It was just insane. The stories were insane. So I'm like, okay, here we go. But I told them, look, we're here in the middle of nowhere, West Texas, but you can drive any direction, right? And within about a 30-mile radius to where this building is located, there is somewhere between 200 and 250 churches. If you drive into Abilene, there are three Christian universities. There are churches literally everywhere in this area of West Texas. So if y'all want to start another church, then we're not going to start another church to be like all the other churches, just to be, maybe to be somehow better at doing what everyone else is doing. No, we're not going to do anything anybody else is doing. Everyone else is going to do their typical church structure. They're going to have this activity and this activity and this ministry, and they're going to have food and fun and fellowship and this and this. We're throwing that all in the trash can. We're throwing it all away. And what we're going to do is we're going to be a church that is dedicated to the intense study of Scripture. I mean, intense study. It's not going to be like we claim that. We're going to go all the way in and we're going to study church history. We're going to study theology. We're going to study doctrine. And we're going to have Sunday school. That's going to be an hour. Sunday morning, it's going to be an hour. Both are hour long sermons. Sunday night's going to be an hour long sermon. And Wednesday is not going to be the little 5-minute devotional and then 45 minutes praying for, you know, Aunt Bertha's ingrown toenail. It's going to be an hour of teaching. We're going to teach. That's what we're going to do. And we went all in. And I taught. And even though I was bivocational, working a full-time job, I took on that role of teaching Sunday school, Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday, hour-long sermons every single time. And anytime we could add anything extra, I was doing so. Work. Now, if things went wrong instantaneously, within 3 months, I'd already started losing people. That small group got even smaller. And I could have kind of gotten even, you know, discouraged and want to give up. But, you know, at this point, hey, I was just excited to be able to preach. So I kept going. And then things started turning around. Little by little, people started showing up. And we started growing. And that little building, the next thing you know, as we started growing, we had some people. Well, it got hit by a tornado and the roof got ripped off. Boom. We didn't do fundraising. We didn't do anything. When we had money, we built. When we didn't, we didn't. And it took about 2+ years and we completely remodeled the entire building. We added on to it where classrooms, a nursery, we laid the concrete and, you know, where wheelchair availability so that people could come in a wheelchair. Nice. It looked amazing. The whole new section and then the sanctuary completely. Carpet, pews, I mean, everything. I mean, we redid the entire inside of the building. We probably spent somewhere between probably $70,000 to $100,000, if not more. And that was all money. We didn't ask for anything. We did what we could. We did what we could at when we could. And the men worked hard. And the next thing you know, well, that place was pretty full. It was full. In fact, there was thinking about buying the property across the street that was a vacant to turning into a parking lot. And then we're even thinking, man, if we get even fuller, we may have to I don't know how I'm going to do that, but we may have to have an additional service. I don't know how. We even had at least brief discussions about what do we do? Could we work this? Maybe we could knock out that wall and make it more. Where could we put more chairs? I mean, things were going really, really well. At this point, I don't even think I was taking a salary at the time. Things were going really, really well. And I was working myself to death. You know, I was working myself to death. But I mean, it looked like victory. I mean, no pun intended, because the church is called Victory Baptist Church. And things were going great. And then, slowly but surely, it started. People weren't happy. Now, they could never truly articulate exactly what they weren't happy about. Sooner or later, some were upset because we weren't doing all of those things. One person was upset because we needed to have a camping trip, and this was going to be like the most important thing the church could ever do, because the men needed to go camping. All these things, and they wanted to have fellowships and get-togethers, all the things that I said no to. But we started doing some of these get-togethers, and I tried to show up as many of them as I could. Now remember, I'm bivocational, working a full-time job in the United States military. I started trying to do some of these things, or at least allowing, not saying, hey, go do these things. But you could just start seeing people were kind of like, one Sunday I taught about the heading of one of the Psalms and the origins of that heading and what it can mean. And that there was almost like frustration that I wasted that much time to talk about it. And then there started kind of this new kind of argument started showing that I somehow wasn't preaching the gospel. Now, no one could ever articulate what that meant, that I wasn't preaching the gospel, because at one point we'd done 6 weeks on justification, but somehow they couldn't articulate it. And I think what they wanted was, they wanted it to feel like normal church, where you come in, you get your nice little 30 to 40 minute sermon, 3 points, really structured as a sermon, where I really wasn't structuring it as a sermon, more, well, if you've ever listened to me teach, in a very different way. So now, when everyone showed up, they wanted something different, and they were like, you're the most amazing teacher forever. But slowly but surely, things started happening. Some people were upset in how I handled the death of my father, because I didn't, I guess, grieve the way they thought I should grieve. It just, everything, just slowly but surely, people found ways to get upset. I made my own mistakes, my own failures, my own sin. There was just a number of things that happened. And the church was small. But it was small, but it seemed like there was unity. Everyone was committed. Everything seemed good. Everything seemed pretty strong. We made it even through the pandemic, and we didn't have any fights or arguments necessary. There may have been disagreements, but there was everything. And it was like, things are going pretty good here. I think, look, we may never grow again, but we could probably stay this way for another 10 years. I think we're in pretty good shape. And then, well, my teaching. I started calling into question lordship, salvation, and little by little, we had people leave clearly because of that. We had people leave. I don't even know why other people left. We had some people leave for sometimes I don't even know reasons. And 2023 was really when things started we're in trouble. We're in trouble because people kept leaving. People kept leaving. People kept, and you're like, oh no, what are we going to do? So I started getting nervous at the end of 2023. And so now here we sit in 2024, and we are facing the end of Victory Baptist Church. And I take full responsibility. My philosophy for church was a failure. My philosophy and how to do church, when you look back on it, it was ridiculous. It was radical. It was stupid. What people really wanted was just to be like every other church. They just wanted basically the same. They didn't like whatever they didn't like about the other churches, whatever they frustrated, they wanted it to just be as close to those other churches as possible with just a few modifications, just a few things different, right? Whether it was a personality, whether it was just make sure you don't teach this doctrine. But if they really were in their heart of hearts, if they could have just admitted it, they really wanted their other church. They just wanted a few modifications. But when they walked into Victory Baptist Church, I'm like, forget your modifications. I'm burning the whole thing down and we're doing it radically different. Now, at first everyone gets excited and then they're kind of like, but I kind of miss this activity and this, and I kind of miss this and I kind of miss this. And I'm like, well, those things, if you wanted those things, you shouldn't have come here. If we just want those other things, go to one of the other 250. So I still believe though that if we were going to exist, we couldn't be like all the others. I still think that that's ridiculous. Now, I was criticized by pastors saying it's too much like a university, it's too much like a seminary, it's not really like a church. And I heard criticism. I mean, their criticisms were always there, and sometimes they got loud, sometimes they went away. But I can look back and realize I messed up. Look, my philosophy was messed up as far as maintaining a church. Now, it lasted for 23 years. So in some ways I did something right, but the end result is things started changing and people did not want that. And I was not willing to change. Now, I had my own failures, my own sin. That's no one else's fault. That's mine. That's my own stupidity. I bear all responsibility for any sin that I committed. I don't necessarily apologize for my philosophy and how to do church, because I believe that you should not have 200 and 250 churches that all following the same template, and there's just some slight modification in how you do things. I think that that's just ridiculous. We don't need that many churches just doing things a little different, but you've got your own little unique thing. You got a nicer building, or you have more programs, or you have a cool youth, or listen to the praise band, whatever. No. There's enough of that. Someone needed to say, hey, think of it this way. You have your mainstream pop music. There's always got to be room for the small indie band. There's got to be room for the small alternative band, using a music illustration. Maybe you'll get it. Maybe you will not. There's got to be room for something a little different, right? So that's what I thought. So I don't apologize for that, but I should have realized at some point that I was going in the wrong direction. And when I really introduced the idea that, hey, we're no longer going to learn theology at Victory Baptist Church. We're going to do theology. We're going to be a church that does theology. We're going to put forth theological hypotheses, and we're going to challenge, and we're going to test them, and we're going to look at them from all these different perspectives, and we're going to challenge what we have believed and our presuppositions, and that was a little way too radical for some. They didn't want that. And so they went, and guess what they found? The typical structure that every other church has. And they're happy. Which means that my church was never going to be right for them in the long run anyway. So the end result of all of it is now at 23 years, I look back, I can see all of my failures. I can see what I stood for that I still believe in, but I can realize that, you know, it was a bad idea. And we're facing the end. We are facing the end. I told you in the end of 2023 that I felt the church would not make it through 2024, and we're facing the end, at least in part. Now, I tell you that entire story because I told you that I have a story here that I'm connected to. That story was published today, March the 18th. The headline reads, "Thousands of churches will likely close down. What happens to all that real estate? Thousands of churches will close down. What happens to all that real estate?" Well, my church is going to be one of the thousands that's going to close down. as far as meeting in the middle of nowhere, Texas, in the building that we remodeled and have been in for 23 years. That is all going to go away. It's the reality. It's a sad reality, but it's a reality. And guess what we're trying to figure out? What do we do with the building? What do we do with it? So we're looking to sell the building. And selling that building is going to have a profound impact on my financial future, right? Because I've never really taken a salary from the church, but they have made my house payment. Well, if the church goes away, then I got to figure out what to do with my house payment, which will have a profound impact on my future and what I'm going to do, right? I'm going to have to figure something out. Now, there's hopes that we'll be able to sell the building and that they will, and the families seem to be in agreement with it. We got to make sure legalities and all those things are in place. Sell the building and pay off the rest of my mortgage, which then I would be set for life. I would be eternally grateful. I would walk away that 23 years I got my house. Thank goodness for that. And then, you know, I can just be a podcaster and do that. Now, there's talks that we're going to possibly now kind of move it to a house church, maybe. And we may do something along those, keep it going somewhat in that capacity. And that will be an interesting new chapter. We don't know how that's going to work. We don't know what it's going to look like. We don't even know. But we're trying to figure out what to do with the building. We don't know what to do. Well, guess what? We're not the only one. Listen to this story. The headline, thousands of churches will likely close down. What happens to all that real estate? And then it shows a church, and then it shows a woman holding a for sale sign. And then it says this, if experts were predicting that 100,000 libraries across the United States were likely to close in the next few decades, people would probably sit up and notice. Certainly if 100,000 school buildings were going to be empty and in small and large communities, someone would be talking about it. But the possible demise of thousands of churches? Crickets. Said Mark Eldson, a Presbyterian minister, author, and social entrepreneur who co-founded Rooted Good, a nonprofit that works with churches on how to use their space. We are not getting the same response when we say that 100,000 churches are going to close. Now, Elston, okay, I think I may have said his name different the first time, Mark Elston, he edited Gone for Good, Negotiating the Coming Wave of Church Property Transition. It is a new book. Listen to the name of it. Gone for Good, Negotiating the Coming Wave of Church Property Transition. A new book of essays about the future of houses of worship. That prediction of church closings is based on the unrelenting math of religion in America. There are ever more church pews with not enough people to fill them. Those who go to church prefer to be a part of larger congregations, flocking to packed out megachurches while driving past a host of struggling congregations with 60 people or fewer. Elston, who is the executive director of Press House, a campus ministry in Madison, Wisconsin, said the 100,000 figure is an estimate based on trends in worship attendance. There is little data about how many churches close or what happens to the houses of worship when they're no longer needed. So they've been looking at this and like, hey, church attendance is going down, 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 down. People would prefer to go to a larger church. They go to the larger church, drive by all the smaller churches, and the smaller churches get smaller and smaller and smaller until they wake up one day and realize we can't pay the bills and they have to sell the building. Now, they may survive in some other form, but the building goes bye-bye. The building is gone. Now, what's interesting is I started talking about this really right. I don't even maybe in the middle of the pandemic. At that point, I wasn't even concerned with my future, but I was starting to ask the question, well, wait a minute. How much money does it take to keep a church building open? How much money does it take to pay for the electricity, the water, trash pickup, maintenance, you know, yard work, just all the cleaning, all the insurance, all the things it takes. And then maybe if you're buying curriculum or if you're paying a staff, how much money does it keep that entire, you know, situation working? And when you look at the money, sometimes you say, for all of that money, what are you getting out of it? Some of those churches don't even have a Sunday night service. Some of those churches, they instead of actually meeting in the building, they'll have small group night and people don't meet in the building. They literally go meet in houses and the building is sitting there empty. And you're like, you're paying all this money for the building. And in many cases, those churches with these nice buildings. I mean, I played the audio of from a sermon review not too long ago, and they were trying to get $200,000. I can't remember how many hundreds of thousand dollars they were trying to get. Something to do with a building. A building, a building, a building. And then you look at all that money that goes into the building, and then you go to their website. They produce maybe one or two sermons a week. Wow. Some of them don't even then put the sermons online. You're like, so all that money goes for what? For people to show up so they can have a Sunday school class? They can show up so that the kids can play some games? What is all that money going to? Because you would think if all that money goes into these buildings, then the buildings would be the source of just preaching, teaching, preaching, teaching, preaching, teaching, preaching, teaching, and putting out content after content after content. But a lot of people like, why are we spending all this money for the building? So I've already been raising these questions about the buildings, but guess what? These small churches, attendance is going down. Money and giving is going down, and they're not going to be able to pay the bills. And they're predicting, I don't know exactly the time frame, but 100,000 churches are going to close. They go on to say, but even a half or quarter of that number would still be significant. Even if we don't get to 100,000, even if we only got to half of that, or a quarter of that, it would still be significant. The bottom line is that there are fewer and fewer people identifying as Christians and attending traditional church activities in church buildings. Elston said earlier this year at an event introducing his book, therefore, there are far more church buildings today than there will be viable or needed that then will be viable or needed in the future. That's just the way it is. He's like, look around. There's going to be all these buildings, and they're not going to be viable, and there's something's got to be done. So they talk about what do you do? We're trying to we're right in the middle of that right now. I'm like, someone please buy this building. Someone please buy the building. Buy the building, please. Now I would prefer that not be the case. I would prefer that not be the case. I would prefer it's just, you know, we could make it. We could make it till, I don't know, 30 years. That'd be great. 31 years. But you know. But we also see a major change coming to the area because we're in the middle of nowhere, Texas. You can look it up on a map. It's Ovallo, Texas. There's literally nothing there. If you look in there, you're going to see the big building right next to the post office. That's Victory Baptist Church. But something's happening. That area is starting to kind of build up. There's lots of people moving to that area. So you think that would be good for any of the small churches out there, but it appears not to be good because we got some big churches from Abilene that seems to be moving that direction. They're big. They've got money. They've got programs. They've got activities. They've got they're going to have everything. And it seems that there's at least two moving that direction. And if that turns out to be true, now maybe one of them will want to buy our building. But even if we were to stay there, those churches in that local area, once these big churches come in and plant a new church plant in these areas where there's already a lot of churches in that little small area that's out in the middle of nowhere. Guess what? A lot of people are going to leave those churches that have been there for 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years, and they're going to go to the new thing. And many of these churches, I think many of these churches may be in trouble for us, like we're going to be. But I know this, for us, there's just no way. Like, that's the writing's on the wall. We were out in the middle of nowhere. Now the big churches are coming in. And the way I do church, someone would walk into my church and go, what in the world is, never mind. We're looking for actual church. This is like a seminary. We don't want to be in seminary. We want church. Okay. So we're finished. No matter how you look at it, we're finished. Okay. So we're going to be trying to figure out what to do with the building. Now, if the building sells, then, well, for me personally, selfish speaking, then, and the church is willing to do what they seem to be willing to do, then I'm going to be, I can walk away going, whew, 23 years. I tried to do it my way. There was success. There was failure. I was an idiot. I made my own mistakes. I committed my own sin. All right, I've got to always live with that. But at the same time, I walked away, staying true to what I wanted to try to accomplish. And my house is paid for. And so now I'm good. And now I can, in this house, walk up these stairs, sit down in front of this microphone and broadcast. So I'm hoping, now that's how it's going to work out. I don't know how it's going to work out. But you know what I realize? We're not the only one. 100,000 churches could be facing the exact same scenario. Now, we may sell. We may be able to start meeting in someone's home. We may stay a small group. And then we can, you know what we can do in that small group? We can dig in. I can say, get the dictionaries and get the encyclopedias. Let's dig in. And then, you know, we can have our own little mini seminary, I guess, you know, and maybe that will be wonderful. It may be something completely new and unique, and I'm all for you new and unique. And we'll see. Maybe it lasts. I don't know what we're going to, we have a lot of uncertainty in front of us. But they go on to say this, the new book's title is a play on words. Many church buildings could be gone for good, sold off to become apartments, breweries, wedding venues, or other secular uses. Or they could be gone but still used for a good cause, depending on what the congregation who used to own them decides to do. Elston, who helped revitalize Press House, a century-old campus ministry that was on the verge of closing when he and his wife were hired as leaders in 2004, spoke to Religion News Service recently about the book and why the future of church property deserves more attention. The conversation has been edited for length and clarity. Okay. Now they go on to talk about all these churches closing, and it goes on for two pages. I'm not going to read all of it, but the name of the book, if you want to just look into this, because it may give you an idea of what's coming and where things are going. Let me read the key paragraph. We are not getting the same response when we say that 100,000 churches are going to close. He edited the book. Now that's Elston is the one who said that. He edited the book Gone for Good, Negotiating the Coming Wave of Church Property Transition. Gone for Good, Negotiating the Coming Wave of Church Property Transition. And then here is a copy of it. Gone for Good, Negotiating, the Coming Wave of Church Property. His name is Mark Elston, Elsdon. And, I don't know if it's available, I don't know if it's available at Amazon. I haven't looked at Amazon. They took me, it looks like, to a particular website and see. Oh, no, here's Amazon. It is on Amazon. It's $19 for Kindle, $20 for paperback. Gone for Good, Negotiating the Coming Wave of Church Property Transition. And I don't know what's going on in your church. I don't know. Look around. Just look around at your church. Just look around. Is it growing or is it getting smaller? Even if you say, well, we're staying the same. Typically, they tell you you need to get 30 new people per year just to maintain, because you're always going to have people leaving. All right. So what is the future? Like, look into your, you know, look into your crystal ball and just predict. You know, what do you think? 5 years from now, what is your church going to look like? 10 years from now. Now, you may never think it's going to happen to you. Look, there were Sundays standing behind that pulpit looking at our sanctuary full of people. I would have told you it's never going to happen. I've figured it out. I have found the people who want church different. I'm doing it right. Yes. Yes. Now, you know, and then things started going wrong. And I'll take responsibility. Probably one reason things were going wrong is, you know, there was a lot of things that happened to me, you know, a seizure disorder, neurological issues, having seizures all the time while I was being bivocational pastor, working a full-time in the military, full-time pastor and having seizures. Okay. With neurological issues, probably wasn't a good mix. Oh, by the way, I was also doing a broadcast where I was working hour after hour after hour on that. And, you know, being bivocational, I would have never admitted it at any time, but I probably reached just burnout and breaking point and probably made bad and horrible decisions. No, I'm not excusing those decisions. I'm just saying, but everything, you know, but I never would have dreamed we would end up where we are. And you know what so makes me so angry about it? Is I had a perfect example given to me. In Abilene, Texas, there's a Baptist university called Hardin-Simmons. We used to call them Hardin Sinners, just as a joke. Hardin-Simmons, in fact, I wanted to go to school there because they had a school of theology. When I was a teenager, I didn't know where else to go. And I went to a Southern Baptist church. It's a Southern Baptist school. Things didn't quite, you know, it didn't all work out the way I envisioned my first school to be, but that's okay. And right down the street from the university was called University Baptist. It's this huge building. It was gigantic building. The sanctuary was gigantic. And then it had like, I don't know, two or three stories of like classrooms and a fellowship hall. I don't know what it all had. It was, it took up like an entire block. It was university. And that was the church. That thing used to be packed out. Well, one month, because I used to do this all the time, I would just take a month and start listening to all the sermons going on in the local area just to see what churches were doing, new theological trends, what was going on, was there theological heresy that I think I needed to warn people about, just wanted to see what was going on. And so I was listening to a sermon that was preached at University Baptist. And when I started listening to it, I'm like, what is going on? And they talked about the fact that sanctuary is empty. This huge sanctuary. And there was like seven people there. And I was like, wait, University Baptist is down to seven people? Well, what happened? The new shiny church that was emerging as the popular one was Beltway Park Baptist. They were becoming the mega church. Oh, and they have a South campus and they have a North side campus and they became, and guess what? All the college kids weren't going to go to University Baptist right down the street because I guess it was now seen as antiquated, old. I don't know what it was. They were going to Beltway, the new, the big, and guess what happened to University? If I was to drive past that where it used to be, it is gone. The building is not even there. The thing was demolished. It no longer exist. And I heard that audio and I just thought, how sad, how bad, how horrible. But you know what I never thought? Oh, it's going to happen to me. That's going to happen. No. And here I sit, March the 18th, 2024. I don't know if we're a month away, 2 months away, 3 months away, 4 months away, 5 months away. I don't know if it's a year away. But I know one way, one of two things are going to happen. We sell the building and everything works out like a beautiful story and we ride off into the sunset. Everyone's happy. The building sold. My financial future is set and I don't have to panic and figure out what I'm going to do there. And we all ride off in the sunset and happy. Maybe we meet in a home and we continue to try to do things in a very unique way and everyone's blessed and we do that until whenever, right? That'll be another chapter. So that's one thing that could happen. We sell the building. The other, we can't sell the building. We can't. So then the building's just, I don't know what we do. Do we just walk away? Do we donate it? Like, I don't know. Does it just turns into like, do we take everything out of it? Try to sell everything out of it? I don't know what you do. Like we, what do we do with our property? I mean, clearly this is an issue because 100,000 churches are going to close. That's why someone wrote a book, Gone for Good, Negotiating the Coming Wave of Church Property Transition. They're there to try to help you figure out what to do. That's a bad sign when people got to start writing books about what to do. I don't know. That's going to be a mess. I don't know what we're going to do. And I don't want that. I don't want, because then it becomes a burden. Then people start having disagreements. And then, oh man, you do not want that. You want this to just be able to sell. But you know what? Isn't it sad that we've reached that point? Now, again, I'm not blaming anybody else. I'm not saying Satan got us and Satan did it and the world's falling apart. I'm not blaming anybody. I'm blaming my crazy idea on how to do church and my own failures and my own sin and my own stupidity. I got no one to blame. But myself for a lot of this. But look, whether someone, their churches close, let's say out of 100,000, that covers every kind of doing church, every way. Like that shows you churches close down for all kinds of reasons. Not always because you can blame every pastor and say they all failed, but out of 100,000, you got people who were doing it this way. They were trying to do church this way. They were offering this. They were offering that. They were doing this. A lot of times, you know what happens to many of those churches? You know what killed them? The new shiny thing came into town. The next big thing hit town. That was the cool place to go. And you say, well, that Christians would not think that way. Give me a break. I've watched it happen right here in Abilene, Texas. Everyone went flocking to those churches. And then what happened to University Baptist? Gone. I don't know how many other churches may have collapsed during that time. I've watched it. I've seen churches split in Abilene. So what is the way? Well, I'll just end with this. A couple of things. I do think that as churches, whether we like to admit this or not, now I'm going to be riding off into the sunset. My ministry is going to be coming to an end and I'm finished and I'm done. And yeah, I'll maybe maintain being a theological podcaster, but you know, as far as you know, that's what I'll be. And so I'll still, you know, have the same passion and zeal and do what I can. But the point is the new generation, the younger generation, I think is going to become more and more questioning of all the money and all the work it goes to maintain a building. Now, if you're a sacramental church, liturgical sacraments, and you need the church for those sacraments, well, then you're going to always be able to make an argument for the building and for all of that because people have to come there in order to receive the sacraments, right? So, you know, I mean, you can make some kind of an argument, but if you're not sacramental, you say, well, you still need the ordinances, right? But they're not, you're going to see those ordinances very different than you're going to see a sacrament, which is maybe essential for forgiveness of sins and spiritual strength, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, but I think a lot, and especially in the Protestant world, at least the historical Reformed view, is the highest point of worship is not the praise band. It's not even it's the preaching of God's word. So it's about the preaching, 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 preaching. Well, someone's going to say, why are we spending all this money so I can come and hear a sermon? When you can give me that sermon 100 other ways for a whole lot cheaper. And I think there's going to be more and more questioning about the building. And as more and more questioning about the building may impact how much they want to give to support said building's existence. Because we already see a lot of this challenge happening in culture, right? A lot of people are like, look, I don't want to go back and work at the office. I want to work at home. I want to work at home. And then some of the companies are like, well, if we can get you to work at home, great. We can get rid of that, the monthly rent we're paying for that real estate downtown. And so there's lots of buildings that are going to be like empty because those companies are like, you work at home, we'll get rid of that building and we save all that money on our overhead. Well, some of that mentality, whether you like it or not, is going to creep into the church. And people are going to like, we're spending how much money to keep this thing open? How much did we spend last year? If you get access to your church budget, look at how much money we went to just maintaining the building. Just for the building, the building, the building. And you'll be sometimes shocked. So I think that's going to become a bigger issue too. What does it mean If 100,000 churches, now when 100,000 churches close, that doesn't mean the church is going to go away. It just means they're going to be getting rid of their building. They're closing down that building. Those ministries may exist in different forms. Do you think that could be a positive thing that these churches get rid of that and they take on a new form? Because, I mean, the early church met in homes, right? Is that going to be a positive or it's going to be a negative? Because there was a big movement for house churches. And then a lot of negative things came about. Well, there's no structure. There's no accountability. And there was a lot like just, you know, speaking negative of it. But could it turn into something positive? Could it? Could it change everything? Or, listen, those small churches that sell their buildings, everyone may have good intentions, but is this more likely? Is this more likely what's going to happen? Those churches that have to sell their buildings, those people will just go find another church. As much as they may want to be committed to it, they're just going to. They've got friends and families who go to these other nice churches. They got a nice building. They got minute. And you're just going to be like, well, why don't I just go there? And so that what you're going to have is fewer churches and more bigger church, like fewer small churches. And those are going to become, those people will go and become a part of the bigger churches. So the bigger churches may get bigger and have more money coming in, more people, and be able to do more things. And a lot of the smaller churches that people are just driving by anyway and ignoring for whatever reason, and those churches are going to slide into obscurity and be the end. There's going to have to be some reckoning here if these numbers are accurate. But like they said, even if it's not 100,000, even if it's half that, it's still a massive change coming. Now, we've talked about the de-churching. There's been books about de-churching, articles, news and sometimes something, everyone, you know, makes it a big deal and it doesn't turn out to be as big as everyone thinks that it is. But everyone's been talking that we're witnessing a great transition, at least in America. Europe's already gone through this, right? Their society has become more and more secular. They're way beyond post-Christian. And many of those churches they turned into who knows what. They turned into all kinds of different things. Those buildings became empty and then were bought by other things. Well, are we about to witness the same transition here in the United States of America? We're going to have those big churches because a lot of people who leave the little churches are going to go to those big churches. So they'll get bigger. They'll have power. And people may see those bigger churches as like, see, everything is great. Everything is wonderful. But what they may be witnessing is the demise of the smaller churches. Are we going to witness that? I'm not making a dogmatic assertion. This news article hit me close because I'm literally going through this. Literally, we have a building where it's going to go away. What do we do with it? That they've written a book to deal with that exact same thing. And again, the name of the book, Gone for Good, Negotiating the Coming Wave of Church Property Transition. Now, that means that property is going to be transitioned to something else. And now who knows what happens to those people? They may form something. Maybe something new will emerge from it. Look, there's going to be a lot of questions here. And I want you to think about this. And you can make your own predictions. You can tell me what you've witnessed and what you've seen. You can tell me how your church is doing. I mean, I don't need the name of it or anything, but I'm just curious. Have you witnessed this? Have you been a part of church that fell apart and sold the building? Have you been a part of this kind of thing? I'm just trying to make sure whatever happens to us, I'm trying to make sure. And I've stated this to the people, not on a recording, but to the people in private that, hey, I want it to be positive. I want it to be like, hey, we've had a good run. We've made it 23 years. We've had success. We've had failure. We've witnessed someone trying to do church in the most radical way possible. It's been good. It's been bad. It's been ugly. Whatever you want to say about it. Now let's celebrate. Let's every time we walk into this building, let's celebrate the fact that we're one Sunday closer to the end, but let's make the most of it because there's going to come a day and I don't know when it's going to be. And I'm going to try not to get emotional. I've spent 23 years of my life driving from Abilene, Texas to the middle of nowhere, Texas, and walking into that building and standing in that building and preaching hour after hour after hour after hour. And it's all coming to an end. I don't know when it's going to be, but there's going to be a Sunday. I'm telling you, it's going to be in 2024 that I'm going to grab my Bible, my book bag. I'm going to walk out that door, get in my car and pull out. And when I start driving away, that's it. I'm never going to be in that building again. And that's going to be, I don't even know how I'm going to process that. I know that day is coming. And it sounds like 100,000 other churches in the coming years are going to go through the exact same thing. I never dreamed I would be in this situation. Never dreamed it. That doesn't mean it's the end of whatever we become. We may transition into something else. We may become a little small house church, and that, hey, that can be great. You know, and guess what? You know what I'll do? I'll have my little microphone on and I'll be recording. And I'll, you know what? Because it's in a house, I'm sure there'll be an internet connection. We'll be streaming it live. And guess what? That little house church will produce more content because if that house church is connected to this podcast, we'll be producing more content than any large church in the United States of America. I can guarantee you that. So we may transition. It may just be the end of a building. It still will be sad because, you know, I've been, you know, during the pandemic, I spent, you know, multiple 4, 5, 6 hours a day inside that building, broadcasting, insane amount of content. You can't take your personal experience and then project it and say, this is what's happening everywhere. Now, in this particular case, I was not doing that. I was just trying to experience what I'm going through and figuring it out and navigate it. And then I see an article, hey, 100,000 churches are going to close. And then I'm like, okay, wait a minute. So it's not me projecting it on them. It's someone else saying this is happening. So then it makes me feel like, okay, I'm not the only one. So that made me want to talk about it because if I'm not the only one, there's got to be a lot of pastors out there and church members and elders and deacons and Sunday school teachers going, man, I don't know what's going to happen. Well, it sounds like we're not alone. And I think a lot of churches need to think about the future. So there you have it. I wanted to talk about it because, well, it's a news article that was published literally today. All right. And the name of the article, if you want to look for it, just look for "Thousands of Churches Will Close Down. What Happens to All the Real Estate?" It's at churchleaders.com. Churchleaders.com. Some may see the article more as an advertisement for the book. I understand that. But whether you think it's you may say, I don't believe this is going to happen. Look, I understand. I never would have dreamed it would happen to me. And even though I saw University Baptist, this gigantic church, just down to, I can't even imagine the sanctuary. That sanctuary probably could hold 1,000 people. And there were 7 people inside of it. What in the world? How is that even, like, what happened? Well, you know, now my sanctuary was never that big, but now there's just a few people. So now I'm like, you know what? Now I can understand. Now I can understand. NewsIF@yahoo.com. NewsIF@yahoo.com. That's NewsIF@yahoo.com. Love to get your thoughts, your feedback, your perspective. And hey, if you're a part of a church, do what you can to encourage and support. Because a lot of churches that are existing today, if this is true, will not be in existence in the next 5 to 10 years. Thanks for listening. God bless.